Present day. Present time.
It's so noisy. Can you just shut up?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Lander Watchcast, and I am your host, Alex Navarro, and folks, anime fever has gripped the Watchcast. We are in the thrall of the animation from the nation of Japan, because, well, we've decided that we are going to honor the wishes of the WGA and the SAG-AFTRA and not deal with Hollywood Productions for a little while they are on strike.
True, we actually reached out to them,
so
we could say with some confidence that we are honoring their wishes as expressed to us, though it was more of a kindly suggestion.
Yeah, like they're not saying, hey, you're scabs if you do this, but it's like, hey, that would be a great show of solidarity, and we want to show solidarity.
Yeah, I don't think we can be scabs by definition, right?
No, I'm not in a union. I guess if...
I guess if we wanted to join the union, it might not.
Or force somebody on here to
this is more of a courtesy than the result of any bylaws or anything.
That's right. The Watchcast, never let it be said, most courteous podcast out there.
But let's be real, because Brad Shoemaker...
I'm sorry. I just have to say, you know what the internet needs more of? Some basic courtesy.
Some courtesy.
You're 100% right about that. Well, you were also, we've been talking about this for a while, actually, Brad Shoemaker and Vinny Caravella. We had been talking about... doing anime on the Watchcast anyway.
Yes.
So frankly, this was just a good opportunity to do that.
Really was. Like, I think I said this somewhere else. Time to, what should we do after Twin Peaks? To anime was about 0.5 nanoseconds.
Yeah, so. Was not much of a discussion, which, you know, and I'm going to say right now, before we get into the anime that we've chosen, which is one that I'm very excited about, one that I only saw for the first time a couple of years ago and very quickly became one of my favorites.
Ooh.
I would just like to talk a little bit about our histories with, anime in general, because I think it's safe to say none of us are anime experts. None of us are deep into the world of Japanese animation.
No.
But we are all fans, at the very least by proxy of existing in video games, where anime and video games often intertwine. There is a lot of crossover in voice talent, sometimes in artistry and creators. You know, the two things sometimes exist in parallel with one another, and so we get a lot of splashback from that just by virtue of playing a lot of Japanese video games.
Yeah, there's that. I'm going to say I'm at least a fan of anime enough to know that I wouldn't ever dare dabble into exactly classifying what is not and what is anime, because I feel like
that's what this podcast is for.
I don't even want to go there. So if we happen to raise your hackles by saying something is anime when clearly it is not, I kind of apologize and I kind of don't. You know what we mean.
I'll tell you right now, my blanket policy is, did a Japanese company or studio make this animated feature / series? Then it's anime.
Okay.
If that's wrong, I will accept that I am wrong.
Uh-huh.
But it is the belief I have held up to this point in my life.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So, like, what would you say up to this point? Like, what's your favorite anime? What's some anime that's stuck with you over the years? What's meaningful to you?
Was it on last week's podcast that I did my rundown of most of what I've seen?
Briefly, yes.
And then I came away from that going like, oh, that's mostly just like horny high school boy anime.
Yeah.
Which, you know, considering I got it all from my friend in high school, I guess that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, that tracks because, I mean, in the 90s, when a lot of us would have been watching this stuff for the first time, let's be real, that's the stuff we often got access to because that's the stuff that people were requesting at Suncoast Video and other places like it.
That was extremely pre-internet, pre-getting video from the internet. That was absolutely whatever you can get at the Suncoast or bootleg from somebody else who already has a tape.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you've got access to.
And then... in the late 90s, obviously, we got a little bit of the Toonami and other, you know, like Cartoon Network adjacent things that would air some of this stuff.
Yeah. When did Dragon Ball premiere on American TV? Because I remember thinking, like, holy shit, there's anime on television now. Was that like 98 or something? 97?
That's got to be Toonami.
I think it was earlier than that.
Was it? I think pre-Toonami?
I don't think it was a lot earlier than that. For some reason, the number 1996 popped into my head, though I could be wrong.
That might actually be the case.
Because
I think that might be the case. Yes, it was 96. The arrival of Raditz premiered on September 13th, 1996.
I only remember that because it was right around the tail end of my high school experience, and I remember a few of the more anime-aligned kids started talking a lot about Dragon Ball Z when that stuff made its way over here. But I never really watched it.
Did it hit Adult Swim before it hit Toonami?
I don't know that Adult Swim fully existed at that point, because around that time it would have been like Space Ghost and not a lot of other stuff like it yet.
Yeah, I don't remember what Dragon Ball Z was on, but I think that was definitely pre-stuff like that.
That's Dragon Ball Z was a big one for me. And Dragon Ball, I watched a bunch of, like, the whole Toonami set.
I'll close that loop. It was syndicated when it premiered in the US. It was in syndication.
Okay.
Trigun, sure. You know, but a bunch of those things. What
is that genre? Fighting anime.
Power level anime. Dragon Ball Z for sure. Maybe like Trigun, maybe a little different, but like Fist of the North Star, it feels like a power level style.
Oh, yeah.
Some of that, obviously, like you said, Alex, there was a Fist of the North Star game from way back when.
That was actually, yes, that's a good point. Is like a lot of my original anime knowledge was backfilled from video games.
Yeah,
we were getting games in the 80s based on anime, and we didn't know there was an anime.
Right.
Yeah, like,
exactly.
I didn't know what the fuck Golgo 13 was until that NES game came around, and so I was like, this is the coolest motherfucker that has ever lived.
I knew that Duke Togo was rude as fuck, but I didn't know whence he came.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there were those. There were some, there were, like, some FMV stuff on the Sega Saturn, the Sega CD that was based off of animes that, like, Lupin the Third, I think, had a...
There's so much Lupin the Third, dude. There's so much.
So there's like that style stuff. The ones I was attracted to was probably like the Gundam Macross stuff early on. There was like a Dragon Quest anime that used to come on real early Saturday mornings that I used to watch before I'd go to like something like Sunday school or something. Maybe it was on Sunday. It was like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. I used to catch it. And it was just weird. But my favorite is Full Metal Alchemist, both the original and Brotherhood. That's probably the one I love the most. It's probably a cliche answer to say Cowboy Bebop is pretty fucking awesome. I like that as a serialized one. I've watched here and there. Foolie Cooley is a weird one. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. I've watched some of that. But there's a lot out there.
Did you know that there's a lot of anime?
There's a lot of it. There's enough that as I look around, I remember I've seen a little bit of other stuff. I think I mentioned I saw a little bit of Ebichu, the hamster anime, at one point. I don't know how I came in contact with this. I just think it has the best title ever for anything. All-purpose cultural cat girl, Nuku Nuku.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Anybody?
I've never seen it, but that's a good title.
I've seen some of that somehow. I had friends in the late 90s around 2000. That I think, God, were you starting to get internet video of stuff? Not quite yet, but...
Not in great quantity.
I mean, we got like...
Like you could probably get like some DivX rips of stuff that showed up on like Usenet or whatever, but
yes,
Naruto. I've seen a bunch of that. Probably more stuff that was brought over for Western audiences is probably the stuff that I have seen the most of, like in dump trucks. You know, like
sure,
One Piece and the stuff that was dumped onto with full dubs. You know,
yeah,
like that's probably my level.
Do you remember your first anime experience?
It was that Dragon Quest thing.
It was that Dragon Quest thing?
It was before I knew what anime was.
Okay.
I guess technically,
Voltron might have been mine, since that was based on an existing anime and just redubbed.
Yeah, I mean, like, Transformers, if you really want to count Transformers.
All right, now we're getting into it.
Yeah.
If you really want to be technical, but I think Tenchi Muyo was the first thing my friend in high school showed me.
Okay.
Which was probably around the time the Dragon Ball premiered on American TV.
Okay.
Yeah, like Gundam is probably my first, like, realization that I called something anime and sought it out to go, like, I have the VHS clamshell of like the Gundam movie.
Right.
And I was like, okay, this is the thing. It's probably when I started learning subs, not dubs, you know, like that whole culture of, you know, obviously Akira was like a big
of a big cultural event movie type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my first one I remember was because I found it in the strangest way possible, which is to say it wasn't a friend of mine that showed me some weird tapes for the first time. It was the guy who ran the after school care program at my school in elementary school. I was like in fourth or fifth grade. He was, let's just say, you know, generously a huge weeb and just a giant nerd. Nice enough guy, but at some, I'm going to say his decision making was not exactly state of the art because he would. So, if you're staying after school, it's usually because your parents have to pick you up later because you're a latchkey kid and, you know, they're working. Which was my situation. And sometimes I would have to stay for an hour, hour and a half after school until my mom could come pick me up. So he would find ways to entertain the kids that were, you know, like sometimes you would just go outside and play dumb games on the yard or whatever. But if you wanted to stay indoors, they would show you like videos, movies, what have you. And he would sometimes just bring in his own stuff. And the first one he brought in that I remember was the first anime I think I ever actually saw, which was Bubblegum Crisis, which is not a thing you show to fourth graders, generally speaking, because boobs show up in that thing like 20 minutes into the first episode. It's also quite violent.
It's one of the few that I... That thing, in my memory, that thing fucking rules. I don't know how well it holds up because I haven't seen it in 20-plus years.
I just watched it during the pandemic again for the first time in ages.
Okay.
And what I will tell you is that, yes, parts of it are very dumb, but as a style exercise, it is still awesome, and the music is still fucking fantastic.
It's like one of the most 80s things I can think of from any culture.
It's great and in that regard. He also showed me like Appleseed for the first time, which is another weird robot anime that I only have a vague recollection of the robot design and nothing else about. And from there, I started to pivot out into seeing things like Akira and, you know, a handful of other like Ghibli films when they started coming stateside. So my experience from there has been a handful of little things that I've either dipped my toe into, tried out, or really gotten into. I still need to watch the entirety of Cowboy Bebop. I've only seen a few episodes of it. I thought it was cool, but then I got sidetracked and just didn't go back to it, so I need to watch the rest of that. I have watched most of the first series of Gundam. I have not seen any other Gundam, so like I really only know the Ballad of Amuro and not much else. And yeah, like, it's just, you know, now that I have much more access to stuff, this stuff is out there in a way that just, it wasn't in the 90s when I was growing up. I want to try more of this stuff. And one of the things that I tried as part of that was this show, which is one of my partner's favorite animes that she saw for the first time in college, the way you're supposed to see it, on a VHS tape she got from a friend.
Got it.
Yeah. And this one we are talking about is Serial Experiments Lane. The, I'm going to say, vaguely cyberpunk, extremely surreal 13-episode arc about Lane Iwakura, a young girl with mysterious events happening around her, which we will get into as we start talking about some of these early episodes. Did you guys have any perception that this show existed until it got brought up for these conversations? And if so, did you know, what little did you know?
I've heard the name for years and years as a notable anime, but that's about it. I think that's about it.
Okay.
I think that's about it.
And Vinny, you had never really heard of this.
Nope.
Okay.
There is one detail, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
That I'm still trying to unpack about it.
Okay. Well,
although it's literally the first thing that happens when you hit press play, so we could just talk about it, but you probably want to set things up a little more.
I will, because I want to kind of talk about a little bit of the history of the show. I'm not going to get too deep here on this first episode into some of the show's themes and kind of inspirations that the individual artists that worked on it were drawing from, because I think that maybe gives away the game a little too much in terms of like where the show is going. But we will talk about that toward the end of this month when we get to the last episodes. But we can talk a little bit about what Lane is and who it was made by. As I said, the show debuted in 1998 on TV Tokyo. I just always have to remind myself that these shows just aired on network television in Japan. This is just regular TV shows, not incredible, you know, feats of art that are only found through like weird back channel methods the way that we had to get to it. You could just watch this shit on television there, which I think is pretty great. The studio that made it, Triangle Staff, went defunct just a few years after this. They were, this is by far, as far as I could tell from my limited research, this is definitely their most notable work, and the one that the individual artists that worked on it also constantly get, you know, like, this is their, the thing that is top line on their Wikipedia pages. But so the principal creators of this show, are Yasuyuki Ueda, was the show creator. I'm just going to name a few of the other notable things that some of these folks worked on. Tell me if you've heard of them before. Again, I'm just picking things that I recognize the names of. I'm sure there are other shows they worked on that are much more popular that I just don't know. But Nia 7, Amazing Nurse Nanako, and Danganronpa, the animation. You know,
okay.
Danganronpa.
Yes, that one I have heard of. Yes.
Director here is Ryutaro Nakamura. Worked on some stuff like Legends of Cristania, Sakura Wars, which I had heard of. I've never seen. And then he also worked as a storyboard artist on a couple of things like Pat Labor and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex.
Okay, both of those I'm familiar with.
Yes. Chiaki Konaka is the principal writer on the show. Brad, I don't know if you've ever actually seen... Have you seen any of the other Bubblegum Crisis stuff?
I don't think so. I always heard it was not as good.
Yeah, that was why my understanding as well. I haven't seen it either, but he worked on Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040. Which is the 90s reboot of the show. Also on Digimon Tamers and the 2003 anime adaptation of Astro Boy. And the last one I'll mention here is Yoshitoshi Abe, who is the character designer for the show. Also worked on Nia 7 and also did the illustrations for the manga All You Need Is Kill.
Okay.
Have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it. I'm not familiar with it.
Yes, also heard the name.
It is most notably the inspiration for the Tom Cruise film Edge of Tomorrow / Live, Die, Repeat.
Okay.
Which is great. That is a great movie if you've never seen it.
I love that movie.
Yeah. So these are the main people who worked on it. As I said, Ueda was the show creator. And by his account, the conception of the show was intended to be, to use his words, original to the point of it being considered an enormous risk.
Okay.
I could see it.
Yeah. So Ueda has apparently, and again, a lot of this I'm just gleaning from reading various wikis here, so tell me if there's details I'm missing here in the comments, but over the course of time, he had made some kind of statement in an An-America interview where he said that Lane was intended as a sort of cultural war against American culture and the American sense of values we Japan adopted after World War II.
Interesting.
He was then asked about it repeatedly, which he said he believed the show had a set of values that he viewed as distinctly Japanese, and he kind of hoped that Americans would not understand the series as the Japanese would. And it would lead to a war of ideas over the meaning of the anime, hopefully culminating in a new communication between the two cultures. Unfortunately, American audiences loved it and had the same views on the show as the Japanese audience did, and he was disappointed by this.
The universal appeal was just too much.
It was too much.
Just shouldn't have made it so good, man.
I know. Yeah. It's worth noting that this show was intended as something of a cross-media property, because there is also a PlayStation video game based on this.
Huh.
It came out slightly after the show, but apparently was in development and written before the show was completed. The idea there was that it was, like I said, it was supposed to be transmedia, supposed to be hit multiple different areas. The game itself was a very puzzle-light adventure game that mostly was about extracting narrative about, you know, because Lane is in the game is talking to a therapist. And it is not really the same story as the anime. It was never released here, as far as I could tell, in any official capacity. But there is, I think, a fan translation of it out there that came out just a couple of years ago. And there are some games that have been reportedly, you know, were at least somewhat inspired by it, including Her Story and What Remains of Edith Finch, to give you an
interesting
idea.
Interesting. Was it popular when it came out?
My understanding was that it was extremely well received.
Okay.
I don't know, I don't know how ratings work in Japan, or if there is like a particular benchmark they use to determine success on that stuff, or if it literally is just, well, did it sell a lot of merchandise? Great. No idea. But by all accounts, I mean, as far as I know, it is more than just a cult success. It has a pretty wide, or at least a pretty numerous audience.
Because, again, I really don't know much about it, but it is a highly regarded or well-regarded a piece entry in the anime, what we're calling anime.
It had always been talked up to me as this really revolutionary thing, and this thing that, like, especially from this era of late 90s anime, was kind of untouchable.
Okay.
And I don't think that reputation is necessarily overblown. For me, it really did knock me back on my ass the first time I watched it. The last thing I want to bring up here is something that I think is a little bit more in Brad's wheelhouse. And this is all stuff that pretty much gets mentioned in the first few episodes, so I'm not really spoiling anything here. A lot of the computer technology in this show is very specifically references to Apple computers.
Yeah, I literally have a Wikipedia page open about Copland right now, because that is a huge thing in the history of Apple.
So just you mentioned Copland, which was it was the
abortive, disastrous Mac OS, or back then System 8, that never came out, that basically was about to put Apple out of business and led to the return of Steve Jobs.
Yep.
Like, it was basically their last fucking gasp, on their road to ceasing to exist.
A few of the other things here, just to mention it. Like, the Tachibana Industries, which is the company that makes the Navi computers, which they use in the show. The Tachibana Orange is a Japanese variety of Mandarin orange. So basically, they are orange computers.
Oh, okay.
I
don't think I caught that.
Well, here's another weird one that I definitely never would have caught had I not read this. Apparently, the episode title cards, the ones that come after the opening credits, are the voice that...
Oh,
is,
yeah.
That
you
voice
you
is
didn't
so
recognize
familiar.
That? Oh, that voice is... That is the whisper...
Yes, it's
dude.
The plain... It is the speech synthesis program Plain Talk. It is the whisper voice that is saying layer 01, etc.
Where it layer 01.
I knew I had heard that somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's some like OS 9 level, or OS maybe 8 or 9 or 7 at that point. We're talking late 90s?
System 7. Copland. Yes, mid 90s. Yeah.
That voice was in there. I mean, there were like 5 Apple voices.
I knew I had heard that voice from somewhere, and I could not place it at all until I was reading up on this before this show. And that definitely like clicked something into place for me.
Hmm.
Last thing I will mention here is the music from the show, specifically the opening theme, which I'm just going to call straight up one of my favorite anime openers anywhere. It is so fucking catchy.
And you don't seem to understand. A shame you seemed an honest man. And all the fears you hold so dear will turn to whisper in your ear. And you know what they say when I hurt you. And you know that it means so much. And you don't even feel the pain. I am falling.
This is by a band called Boa, which is an English band. Who had a record deal in Japan. This song is called Duvet. It is from their 90s album. I'm trying to find the name of it. I believe it is The Race of 1,000 Camels. And I had to go dig this up because I grabbed the soundtrack, the official soundtrack from the show, and it doesn't have that song on it.
That seems criminal.
I assume because of licensing things, because music licensing in Japan is a fucking nightmare.
If you wanted any music from this show, it's that.
Totally.
The song is the thing I wanted to come in here and talk about, because as soon as I turned this thing on, my fucking brain exploded, because I know every word to this song. I must have listened to this song 1,000 times, and I have no idea why, to the point that I was like, did I watch all of this show back in the day and suppress the memory? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, seriously... Probably haven't thought about this song in 20 years.
So do you have any idea how you came upon it?
Like, no idea how I know this song so well if I didn't watch the show, because then once I started watching it, I was like, no, I don't have any recollection of this show.
And I think you would, is the thing.
I must have been exposed to that song some other way. And I don't know how else that would have been, because this, like, was this big on MTV? Was this...
No.
Did this song have any presence outside of the show?
So it was, apparently the song did super well as a single in Japan.
Okay.
And, but like, I think it also did okay on like the UK charts and stuff where the band was from.
It's entirely possible. One of my, I had, you know, a bunch of friends on IRC around this time who were super into anime. It's possible I was exposed to the song through them because they probably liked the show a lot, but
yeah.
Like,
Patrick Klepek.
Yes. not the biggest anime fan, I would say, among that crowd.
Yeah.
I actually went on my NAS because it's full of files that still have all the timestamps from the last 20 years. I found an acoustic version of that song, timestamp 2002, that I must have downloaded then.
Okay.
So.
Wild.
Apparently I was way into the song, but yes, it's a very good song.
The rest of the soundtrack is done by Reiichi Nakaido, who also does the end theme. And I'm going to say right now, I like a lot of the rest of the soundtrack for this show. There is maybe no greater discrepancy between how much I like an opening thing and how much I don't like the end theme in any anime I've seen than this
one. Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
And again, I'm not here to say I'm even that familiar with a lot of anime, but you know, in a 26 minute runtime, you are burning at least six
two and
minutes
a half
with
minutes
your,
maybe
it,
total
well
between
with your
song,
intro
yeah.
and your outro, because
yeah.
it's like the full song each time.
Yes. Well, I mean, to be fair, the opening theme version is shorter than the 3.5 minute version that is on BoA's album.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah. still, yes, you are still burning at least a few minutes of every episode on this music and this yeah. slow pan back of Naked Lane on the computer chips and what have you.
Yeah.
It's just not a good song is my problem more with the end title. But that opening theme is such a fucking banger. And I like the opening credits a lot, too, because it kind of gives you a flavor of what is in store for you without really giving the game away in terms of what's actually happening here. In Serial Experiments Lane, we will be talking today about the first three layers, episodes, if you will, which are, and I'm pulling them up right now, bear with me, Weird, Girls, and Psyche. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to just kind of make this a bouncing from scene to scene recap of what we saw, because this is not a show that is particularly dialogue or plot heavy. There's a lot of surreal imagery. There's a lot of stuff that just kind of happens and they just kind of linger on in this show. So I kind of just want to bop around and just sort of talk about like the stuff that stood out to you guys, the meaningful moments to you as we go through and kind of what you think is happening as we go through it. And the show kicks off with a very morbid bang with a young girl who we later come to know by the name Chisa Yamada commits suicide by jumping off a rooftop late at night as a young couple get into some heavy petting on the street right before she comes crashing down.
Yeah, just doesn't seem too disturbed and...
There's a really just creepy smile on her face, yeah. kind of right in the moment before she does it.
You got a lot of drippy pooling blood.
Yeah.
In the post there.
It gives you I think just one, it's a tone setter, but two, you know, you get pretty quickly here, like some of the initial notions of like what background art on this show is going to look like with kind of the weird shadowing and use of what almost looks like blood kind of as shadow within the darker scenes.
That's the thing. The revelation of the first like 10 minutes of this, like stylistically really sets your expectations to not necessarily like, I'm not going to say like believe what you're seeing as in like, this is really happening or it's not, but more just like the entire tone of everything is like kind of that of like reverie sort of. It's like everything feels a little detached from reality or hyper real, you know, it's like the splashes of red all over the place, the extremely like blown out or featureless
other whiteness parts of the daytime scenes. Yeah.
Yes, it's just like, again, I'm not like trying to pick every shot apart, like, is this a real one or is this happening in some simulation or what the hell's going on here? But it's just more of like I don't know, kind of get lost in the whole thing in a weird way that's like a little disorienting.
Well, I think that's, I mean, I was on board with the show pretty much from the jump. And the thing that really stood out to me from the very beginning of it was the way that a lot of the background art is framed and sort of like shot cinematography. Like the every shot of power lines in this show feels like it is just dripping with meaning, and sort of like there's just a like every way everything is sort of like captured at a severe angle. The way the shadows are kind of mixed with the, like you said, the incredibly blown out white surfaces of daytime, you know, sort of like everyday life in Japan. Like every shot in this show, and especially in these first few episodes, is so striking and so memorable. Like it's the stuff that really has stuck with me since I watched it. I mean, the plot has too, but especially once you kind of get to the end of it. But just the art in this show is incredible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the power line stuff, something's going on there. And also the audio design, whenever they show them, that horrible hum.
Yes.
That is really unsettling.
The omnipresent hum of the electric world.
Yeah.
We need to back up to the intro real quick for a second. Does anybody want to do their best impression of present day? Ha ha. Present time. Ha 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 ha.
Present day. Present time.
Like that is the shittiest, most sneering laugh. It's like amazingly well executed for whatever it is they're going for.
It's like borderline from soft level, like cackle. Like it's real creepy.
Yeah. Anyway, like that's it's another weird little tone thing. Another touch.
We're also getting in this intro a lot of title cards, with a kind of tie-dye swirling background and a lot of, you know, Japanese text that has been translated into these sort of, I'm going to say, at least in these early stages, sort of unknown, uncertain what these things even are or what they refer to, but messages that seem to be coming to the characters that are being focused on in the scene.
Yep. Like, no idea what was happening there.
I mean, the one thing I can tell you is that apparently the artist who decided to go with this route was very influenced by Jean-Luc Godard, who used a lot of, like, text title cards in his stuff.
Hmm.
Any theories about what any of that means?
No.
Okay.
At this point, or
just in general?
I mean, I mean, in general, I would assume that's like conversation happening in The Wire.
I don't know. Some of it. I mean, some of it seems like inner monologue.
Yeah.
Also, like at the beginning, where the girl kills herself, says, "Or and you see, I don't need to stay in a place like this." Like, it's hard to say.
Hard to say. Like, you know, by the time we're done with episode 3, there's definitely some. There are other worlds than these shit going on.
Yeah, like that's we kind of get to it as we go through this. Like the whole thing still feels like it's building towards something, but I don't know if I should be expecting that or not.
I'd say it is building towards something, but I'm not, you know, I mean, I think what it is could be any number of different things here, because again, we are dealing with late 90s, you know, interpretations and visions of what a wired and connected future would be.
Yeah.
And I think you can kind of draw some potential ideas from what other things we're doing from around this
Like, actually, my expectations, I think, have been poisoned a little bit, because I saw some way, I don't even know where this was, just Googling the show, like some place writing this up said, like, this show was like a seminal, like, inspiration for The Matrix, which I looked at the release timelines. That doesn't quite make sense, because The Matrix only came out like 6 months after this show.
Yeah.
But seeing
maybe
that comparison.
Maybe visually, I don't know, it seems like The Matrix would be all but done by the time
basically going into it, seeing between that comparison and how dreamy the beginning of this thing is, like it was hard not to think like, oh, maybe there's some big Neo coming out of the Matrix reveal on the way, and that's why they made that comparison.
But even still, like, you know, even outside of like direct Matrix comparisons, like this show was cyberpunk fiction had existed for many years before this. You know, the idea of, you know, the internet and connectivity was very top of mind for a lot of, you know, artists and creators at this period. So, like, you know, whether or not it is just straight up doing a Matrix thing or if it is doing some version of that, it is drawing from the same wellspring that a lot of other fiction writers, you know, were coming up, like,
right.
When presented with an all-connected world, what do you do with that? How do you imagine a world where this kind of stuff exists?
Sure. Yeah, I guess what I mean is more like in a concrete, structural way. Is the dreaminess at the beginning of the stuff like depicting some world within a world thing that will then later be clarified, or is that just the tone of the show? I guess, and you don't have to answer that.
I'm not going to.
That's a rhetorical question. You know what I mean? But that's just kind of what I'm saying is like,
Like, are we in some simulation here?
Right, right. Yeah. Like just the information I came across before this, like, is that just how this show is, so, or are there layers to this that are yet to be peeled back?
Because, like, I'm definitely starting to get, at least by episode three, a little, I was, you know, starting to head into maybe like a Ghost in the Machine style of, our consciousness is being pushed somewhere else within, you know, in a digital realm, and this is the transmissions along the wires, and we haven't really talked about Lane much yet, but you know, what's Lane's relationship to these voices and what's happening?
Yeah, like, even honestly, even her like extreme detachment from everything seems notable.
I love that she is like kind of a you know, she's not into computers really. To her, the computers is gathering dust, or what do they call them? The navvies.
Yeah, that's the like super high tech, like fancy new thing she gets, right?
Well, she had a new navi. She had a kid's navi before that, I guess.
Dude, that thing rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so cool looking.
I have a real affection for all of the red computers that were coming out of Japan in the 80s and 90s. From like, you know, go Google the Sharp X1, or like the Famicom had a lot of that nice maroon on it.
Mm-hmm.
Lane also has a cool red computer in here, which is rad.
But she seems like, you know, it's there. Clearly her dad is way deep in computer stuff.
Yes.
And good old Yasuo.
The like, internet slash, I'm just going to call it the internet, but in this universe, it is called The Wired.
Yes.
Yeah, Wired. The Wired is an unbelievable name for some kind of online world.
I kind of wish the internet was just called that.
Yes.
I assume that it sounds like they say, Brad, you probably pick up on this more, and maybe Alex. Are they saying The Wired in Japanese when they say it?
I don't remember.
Or is that a translation?
I don't remember.
I definitely heard mail said in a Japanese accent, but I don't remember if Wired is in that.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it's in our translation, or if it's like what is the actual translation, but it is a cool name.
Yeah.
For their internet. The dad, way into it, got six, seven monitors.
His shit looks like your basement, man.
Are those all his, or is he fixing some for other people, or are they just his?
I think they're all his.
Okay, because he does have like six monitors, say eight monitors. This was way before multi-monitor was a big thing.
This man has gear lust.
Also, just because I can't help myself, like the shots of the UI up close that he's messing with, like if that is not literal next step, it is like basically a carbon copy of it. Which is the thing that became macOS after Apple bought Next and brought Jobs back, which is just another deep fucking cut. Like, there's a lot of deep cuts for computing stuff in here. Like the scene where they're in the computing, what do they call it? Computer information or computer info class or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Oh, where they're doing the prints.
The teacher appears to be writing literal C or C++ on the chalkboard.
Well, there's a part that comes up in one of the later episodes where like the kids are like, I mean, you went to computer information class. They show you how this motherboard works there. Like, yes, the information manual for this is just in school.
Yes, I was like, I extremely wanted to live in that world at that moment when they were like, they're teaching you basic motherboard mechanics in grade school.
This is a big part of the reason why I picked this show, is because, Brad, I knew you in particular would really go nuts for the way this show depicts technology and the internet.
The computing stuff is pretty rad.
So it's clear, at least from some of the stuff we're talking about, or not clear, but it seems to be expressed that this is close to our reality, but either in the future,
it's present day, present time,
present day. Mm-hmm. It's close enough, but there are differences here, either where this is like, you know, 5 minutes in the future, or some splintered version of what we have, and Lane is in middle school.
Yes.
Right?
Junior high.
And seems to, I don't know, Lane seems like a cool cat. She's like, doesn't really seem to care what the other kids think of her, though they might think she's a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, like, you don't get a whole lot of a sense of an inner life from her, honestly, early on. That's kind of what I meant about her detachment. Like, her demeanor is just so, I don't know.
Seems curious.
Kind of.
Got a curiosity.
She's interested, I would say, but in a very detached, clinical way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, but then again, the other girls like razz her later, and maybe this is episode three, for not being social enough. They're like, oh, you'd be way more happy if you were more social.
Yeah.
So, like, that's, I guess that's obviously, that's just part of her character. But
Well, before we get to that, the you know, our introduction to Lane is her coming to middle school one day, and you know, there's a little bit of the razzing from the other girls, but the main thing, the main topic here is that a bunch of the girls got an email from Chisa, despite the fact that she had already died.
Lane! So, did you get one too? Get what? The email. Email? Chisa Yamoda's email. I'm not up on all that stuff. You really ought to check your email at least once a day. It's best to, you know.
Baby Lane doesn't know computers.
Huh? Poor Julie. Why is she crying?
Because she got that awful email from Chisa. Oh, can't you put two and two together?
Chisa?
It was suicide. She was the one in D in our second period. She jumped off a building last week. The teacher told everyone.
And it's not just Julie. There were a whole bunch of other people who had gotten email from her this week also.
But if she's
dead, then we shouldn't be getting any email from her. It must be a prank.
Yeah, you could probably summarize the entire plot of these three episodes in like 30 seconds in terms of like beats that happen, and that's for probably the main one from this first episode. Because there's so much, again, there's so much of like I'm looking at the shot of her in class where she holds her hand up and her fingertips all start smoking, you know?
Yep.
Like there's so much, there's just so much like fucking raw ass imagery in the show. Mm. That isn't necessarily like, oh, that is an event that is on the timeline of plot points in this thing, but is more like building mood and creating mystique or whatever.
But that one definitely is like a, hey, we need to know this because this seems like, and Lane's kind of interested. And, you know, this one of the girls is extremely upset because it's pretty upsetting.
Yeah, it's a freaky thing to happen.
And I feel like this kind of sets Lane off on a whole, the kind of whole... not crusade, but the steps of events to get her to see what's going on here with these emails. Like she is curious, like, how did this happen? When did you get it? Did everyone get it?
Mm-hmm. Did I get one?
Which makes her go try her little kid's computer at home, to check her email.
I think if she made her realize, oh wait, I have email. Right.
Lane, I remember walking home with you once. Do you remember? I have only given up my body. You see, by sending you email, I can use this system to explain to you that I am still alive. I wanted to let you know this, Lane. I want all the others to know too, so I have sent them email also. You may find this hard to believe. Do you understand? It's okay if you don't. You will all understand soon.
Why did you die?
There is a rumor at that school that this email is some sort of a prank. But I want you to know, Lane, that it is not a prank. This is real.
But why? Why did you die?
Here. There is a god.
And I guess it kind of, they go into this a little bit in one of the, in the talkovers when she's in class, but like, I guess the Navi is a little more than just an operating system. There's some kind of, AI or
there's like an AI assistant in there. Yeah.
So, something going on
because
there.
There's a lot of voice activated stuff that's happening with the computers as well. And it seems like it is responding to the user in a way that does not just require a keyboard.
And also, I wouldn't say syncing with the user, but it seems like some kind of personalization that happens with the computer.
Yeah, that seems a lot stronger with the fancier model that she gets later.
Yeah.
And there's also like voice message stuff because then she goes home and also has a message from Yamada.
A somewhat upsetting one.
And it gets all religious.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Seems like there was a lot of religion bleeding into anime at one point, wasn't there?
I have only given up my body bit.
But it's also like, why'd you go? And like, God's here?
Yeah, God is it's the God is here stuff is particularly what I was thinking about.
Yeah. Which, you know, again,
And that doesn't... Well, we'll get to... I thought that came up at least one more time. I can't remember.
I'm not sure exactly what... you know, I've never seen this before. I'm not sure where Lane's character goes. I'm not sure if they're, you know... I feel like watching this in 2023 eyes, I'm trying to, like, map personality traits onto Lane. Like, oh, is she expressing these kind of personality traits that people with this have or this have? So it's hard. I don't know if
Are you saying she's an INTJ?
I don't know. Wait, what's an INTJ?
Oh, it's not a dumb personality. It's okay. It's not a thing.
Is she kind of like on a spectrum, right? Like, am I mapping these things because socially she seems to like not pick up cues all the time? But I love her character. She seems completely honest. She's basically goes to tell her mom, like, "Hey, I got this email," and the mom seems checked out.
We have to talk about
all three episodes.
The mom doesn't seem great. The dad seems pretty awesome. I'm not so sure about the mom.
Early episodes, I feel like the thing with Dad is that, yes, he wants to give his daughter the best stuff, but also he seems like it is almost like gear lust by proxy more than anything else.
Maybe a little bit.
He definitely seems like he is enabling or pushing her into something. The only person who just seems like went through a portal out of our world into theirs is the other daughter.
Oh, the older
just
sister,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, what the hell is going on here? And like, she clearly doesn't have this supercomputer. The dad is able to get this supercomputer on the, you know, delivered, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his whole weird porn fantasy happening in his, the wired room. Don't bother Dad. And like,
if these monitors are blinking, don't come a knocking.
You know that Navi? In my room? It's old now. Do you think that I could...
So finally caught the computer bug, have you? Lane, you are in junior high now already. Your school chums must be leaving you in the technical dust. Huh? We should upgrade that old Navi. You know, Lane... In the real world, or the wired world, people are connected somehow. That's how societies are created. You should broaden your horizons. Make an effort to create friends. Take the initiative. Even a girl like you should be able to make friends right off the bat. You can live and communicate in both worlds. There's nothing to be afraid of. I wish your mother could understand that.
Scared? Not really.
So, why are you up so late? I'm talking about your old Navi.
I have a friend I want to see.
Yeah!
And, you know, when the turn on the dad, really, Brad, I think is late in episode 3 when she asks him about the psychic. Is that what it is?
The psyche, yeah.
Which we'll get to shortly,
yeah.
And then the dad is like, "I don't know." And he's like, "She's like, I thought you would know what this is." And he's like, "No idea. I'm shutting the door."
Yeah.
Fair. I forgot about that. I was mainly thinking about, like, you know, he buys her the top of the line
computer
as soon as she asks for it. And then he's like, "I'll set it up after dinner." And she's like, "I want you to set it up now." So he does it. You know, he's like,
"Yeah, totally."
Someone somewhat supportive. Also, we'll get to the episode 3, the way her mom reacts to her. The morning after the main event of episode 3 is some shit.
Yeah.
It's the mom. I was like,
the mom seems like she's on Quaaludes.
I don't know where this whole series is going. The thing I was like, is the mom an android? Did the dad build the mom? Is that where we're going with this whole thing? Because she just seems like she's there to cook most of the time. She's at the counter cooking and basically trying to run a household with no other real interaction.
Well,
and the sister just seems like a normal kid.
Yeah, she seems sort of annoyed about everything, and that's kind of it, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Lane in this episode, she goes through some shit, you know, after she talks to her dad in his, you know, nightmare computer room.
Nightmare is a strong word, okay?
Well.
It's an awesome computer room.
But then she has a nightmare of her own is where I'm going with that. You know, she has that vision in school of the girl and the train and sort of like the weird cloudy environment and all that stuff, which is, you know, I mean, kind of a fucked up vision to have in the middle of middle school.
Yeah.
And then she sees her again when she's walking home. Stuff.
That weird face shifting stuff is yeah. super creepy.
Like the way, like, yeah, it will just sort of shift into this like very, ah. I don't know how to describe it other than to say sort of vacant smile.
But they had like superimposed two, yeah. two faces. It's very unsettling.
It's very unsettling. And again, you know, it all kind of sets a tone here. And Lane does see the girl on her way home in another vision. Mm-hmm. Then she sort of disappears into this ribbon-like sort of mist. And
cool effect.
It's a very cool effect. And before we get into the next two episodes, we got to take a quick break. So we will be right back. And we are back, and Vinny, there was a thing you wanted to mention real quick here before we get into layer two here.
Oh, yeah, I love all of Lane's clothing choices. The, like, bare mm-hmm. One-piece PJs or just kind of loungewear, the hats. She's got style. And I feel yes. like she's just cool with it.
I mean, everyone in the show seems to kind of make fun of her style because they think it's not, like, adult enough,
uh-huh.
Especially when she goes to the club, which is about the next thing we're going to be talking about here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I think her sense of style is actually pretty great, and I do enjoy that bear suit. That bear suit is very adorable.
Yeah, and her slippers, the whole thing. I mean, she's got a lot of yeah. stuffies in the room.
Yeah.
But
who
yeah.
all seem to be kind of watching and judging as she does various things, and the way that the cinematography kind of
uh-huh.
frames it. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with those stuffed animals, man.
They're very backlit.
But this is where we get the introduction to the club here at the beginning of Layer 2. Siberia,
mm-hmm.
Which is a sort of cyberpunk rave club where a bunch of adults and also young children seem to have no problem frequenting.
Yeah.
And that is where we meet up with this fella who grabs this illicit pill slash chip, which causes him to accelerate, shall
uh-huh.
we say.
Uh-huh. Accelerate. Slow-mo. It's a very slow-mo-ish.
Kind of the opposite of slow-mo, I guess? Or is it? I don't know.
Well, I think you experience time faster, so everything seems in slow motion to you. Is that what's
maybe
going on? Kind of slow
yeah.
mo.
I think so.
But it's a cool setup for it. Like, you know, like the, you know, it's not really a drug. It's this like kind of
weird spiky chip
yeah,
pill thing.
Yeah, in like this gel cap that he cuts open. It's, I don't know.
And they don't waste much time telling you kind of what this is and what's going on with that. But the basic gist is that it is an illegal black market drug, Accela, as we said. Where the user experienced this heightened sense of speed of reality for about 24 hours, at which point the juices in your stomach, you know, dissolve the chip and it no longer functions, supposedly, though apparently they allude, at least in one of the reports,
yeah.
to maybe there are some after effects that are poorly studied at this time. But we don't really know who this kid is at the beginning. We just see him in the club in Siberia very lustily taking his Accela, and it, you know, well, let's just say that will come back a little bit later.
So at the end there, I didn't catch this, but later on in episode 3, he sees that woman yelling back. Is that supposed to be like the Lane lookalike that the friends keep saying is in the club?
Potentially, because we don't really know what any of that stuff means at this stage.
Okay.
All we know is that both Lane friends and other people at Siberia seem to allude to there being a girl that goes to Siberia that
yes.
looks an awful lot like Lane but behaves completely differently from her.
Is that the one yelling when the guy's on?
That's
the...
what I was wondering. Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't catch it at the time, but then I thought that shot, they frame that shot like you're supposed to be like, this is important, but then
oh, you can kind of see the braid actually, so I think it is, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. Lane's one braid is definitely one of, like, the more deliberate character choices for her. I think the idea was that, like, they wanted to make it so that, like, there was, you know, like, the perception was that she's somewhat closed off from everything else, and she has, like, one ear covered, more or less, you know, from the, I mean, again, about a show about mass communication and everything being connected, you know, like, that's, I think that was the deliberate choice there. But it is also helps kind of separate her from the rest of the girls who all have very similar kind of like schoolgirl dress and haircuts. But yeah, that's, you know, this is the introduction of Accela. This is Lane plumbing ever deeper and also running afoul initially, or seemingly afoul, of these men in suits and who seem to be hanging around her house a fair amount.
Yeah, it's creepers.
Any sense of what any of that means? All we know is that they are guys in suits, they drive a black car, and they have weird laser Borg things attached to their faces.
But not always.
Right? Not always.
The first guy does not.
The first guy is just wearing sunglasses, it looks like.
Or I think the guy hiding behind the pole.
Mm-hmm.
Something's up with Lane. I initially thought they were, maybe she was hallucinating it or imagining it, but then I think it's the sister or somebody else. It's the sister encounters them.
She sees them later.
That's
yes,
the Borg
on their
folks.
Doorstep.
Yeah. So
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe now that we've popped the bottle open on Matrix, maybe they're the agent, you know, Smiths of this world.
Yeah. That's why I'm kind of like declining to speculate because of that Matrix stuff I ran across. Like it just makes it too obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the case or not.
I don't. Clearly, they are not afraid to engage with or be seen because they are not doing a good job of hiding.
And if nothing else, they seem interested at the very least in Lane's household, though to what extent, none of that is known yet.
Yeah.
This is where you get, like, she's in school and she's getting this sort of, like, you know, she's hearing or sensing this description of what Acela is. Multiplying the brain's operational capacity by 2 to 12 times.
Uh-huh.
It is a nanomechanism, is how they describe it.
A new type of smart drug on the street called Acela uses nanomechanisms that oscillate at a specific frequency within the body. This triggers the secretion of a synthetic hormone. It is said that when secreted, this hormone completely alters the response time of the human brain, making it seem as if one's awareness is accelerated. Not only its awareness, but the workings of the brain itself are altered. Multiplying the speed at which the brain calculates by a factor of 12. This nanomechanism itself is destroyed by digestive juices within 24 hours, but it is unknown how long its effectiveness lives on in the brain.
And in here is where she gets invited by her friend to go to Siberia with them.
Yeah, friends, a quote. All right.
So there's
Amaru?
One friend I think is legitimately a friend,
yeah.
And that is Arisu, otherwise known as Alice.
Okay.
That is, you know, it's the trans, I don't know, transliterate, I don't know how you say it, but like the Japanese way of saying Alice.
Okay. So she seems conflicted. She's like, she seems like she's trying to be in two circles, right? Like that, mm-hmm. the cool girl circle and like also be not a jerk to Lane. Like,
yeah.
Be friends with Lane. And, you know, the other girls are kind of bragging about going to this club and...
You know what? She does look like her.
Huh?
So, Lane, what were you doing last night anyway?
Huh? See, I told you.
Come on. It wasn't her. You're right. She looks nothing like her.
Well,
tell me.
What?
We were partying, Lane, out at Siberia last night, where we saw a girl who looked exactly like you.
You say Siberia? We were scared at first, but then we all finally got up the courage to go there last night.
Oh, come on. It wasn't such a big deal.
Oh, right. You were scared.
It's a new club that plays really great hardcore techno for a really hip young crowd. And you know, there was a girl we saw there who looked a little bit like you, Lane.
But last night, I was...
I believe you, Lane. There's no way it was you. I admit, though, I didn't get a close look at her, but she was wearing these really wild clothes and was copping attitude and chewing people out all night long, right?
Yeah, it was like she was like the total opposite of your personality.
But I saw her. Lane does look like her. Say, I've got an idea. Next time you come with us.
And then we can really make sure.
Cut it out. You're just making fun of her. You know, maybe when a girl like Lane goes to a club, her personality does a complete 180. Or maybe she would just have a good time for once in her life. What do you say, Lane? Are you afraid or what?
Might even find someone really nice.
I bet there's a really fun girl inside that shell you're wrapped up in, just dying to get out. Right, Lane?
I don't know what you mentioned. You kind of alluded to it before, Alex, of like, what is it? Not is it illegal to go to this club at this age? It doesn't seem like it's like
It doesn't seem like there's any real rules there for the most part, other than maybe don't commit murder.
Yeah.
But even that, it's like they're open the next day. Yeah. So apparently it's not that big of a deal.
So, yeah, like, and they're like, ah, you should come out with us, Lane. And, you know, like, well, yeah, you definitely come out with us. And there, this is where we got more of the, like, were you there at the club? Because mm-hmm. there's a Lane alike that really looks like you.
She looks so much like you.
It looks really like you, but it could have been you because it is definitely not the way you act.
So. Yeah. This next scene, I imagine, is one of Brad's favorites. It is the day the Navi is delivered, big new one to the home.
Yeah, before we get there, she has another, or maybe the most extended vision while she's still in school there of this weird, like, another creepy face girl, but also these weird shadowy figures around her.
Yeah.
And they kind of pass right through her.
Yeah, like, that was definitely a moment where I was like, all right, like, I really am not sure if this is building toward some kind of clarification or... what is happening here? God, that face is so creepy. I can't.
It's really freaky. It is maybe one of the single freakiest images in the show.
Anyway, that is something to file away for later, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, the thing I will say about this show, without giving anything away, is that I do feel like a lot of what they show you, even in the more like kind of, you know, ethereal and seemingly like story detached moments, does have some kind of meaning to it. Mm. That's it. That's all I'll say.
But yes, this is definitely the moment that I've realized that Lane is more social than I was, because if I had just gotten a new computer, there's no way I'm just going to walk away from it instantly and go out and do a thing.
I mean, she's interested in it, and it's cool, but I really get the sense that, you know, the dad is the one who is being like, yeah, I'll get you top. You want some cool stuff? We'll get it.
Well, it seems like she's only interested in terms of, like, her interest in finding out what's going on with this girl and these freaky emails and sort of, like, what its connection to the Wired is. And, you know, she's using this opportunity because she knows her dad is very adamant about technology and wants her to be, you know, sort of in the mold that he is of being extremely interested in this stuff. So she's just kind of using that to her advantage to get better technology so that she can continue her quest.
Yeah. Definitely has a sense of like the kid that got the, you know, 4090 and the top of the line computer and is still just playing, you know, Command and Conquer or something, being like, this mm-hmm. is the game I play. And be like, dude, you got this smoke computer. I just checked my email on it. Just waiting for emails from the other side. That's, I gotta get them fast. I gotta get them the fastest I can get them.
This Navi is so cool. Fast, simple to use. I wish. Oh. So all of this here is for you?
Not sure.
Huh? Then you don't even know what all of these things are? It's a top-of-the-line Navi. Fully loaded, too. A computer with this kind of horsepower can handle any kind of software without ever crashing, even in the Wired. Me, I only use a home brewed system myself. It doesn't hold a candle to this.
It doesn't matter. You see, I don't know hardly anything about it.
You will soon enough. Well, so long.
What did they say? I was trying to understand what the delivery guy was. I mean, and not like I'd put too much energy into it, but he said that you'd have no problem like surfing the web basically with this. Is that mm-hmm. the implication? Like the Wired, you'll have no worries like getting on the Wired. As if there's something I still don't understand what the Wired is. I was imagining this computer would have some VR element or something like that, but it doesn't seem to.
Well, there's an implication here, which, you know, nothing has really been clarified at this stage, but like there's an implication here that there are ways to connect to the Wired that aren't literally just checking your email and surfing the web.
Okay, so maybe we just haven't gotten there yet. Like,
yeah.
Okay, and this computer would have the horsepower to do it.
But there's nothing that has been clarified at this stage as to like what any of that might mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this like cyberpunk moment of the guy saying like I use a homebrew system myself. Like,
uh-huh.
Just the idea of like some people here just like cobble their computers together out of like whatever parts that they can get their hands on.
Yep.
Wait, I'm sorry. I was just scrubbing through the episode where Lane comes down to catch what I assume are her parents.
That's her parents
in this like just locked embrace, and I don't know if this is a intentional just mouths locked together or it's just the stylistic stuff of the anime.
The stillness of it is what makes it most unsettling. The way they are sort of like, it's like they're frozen in a kiss.
Just, just locked it together. Is it, do you think, is it just supposed to be like, hey, there aren't a lot of frames in this animation, or is it, are they just sucking face? just
not for me to say one way or the other. I will say it is definitely an unsettling image. You know, it's weird enough to walk in on your parents making out. It's another to see them completely still while they're doing it.
Okay.
Like they're in a fucking Gustav Klimt painting or something.
And then, you know, she's just like, I would rather have this set up now.
Yeah. Instead of after dinner, could you set up my computer right fucking now?
And I get it.
Like, okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
You want to get on the internet. I get it.
Now, what do you think about this new computer that she has, Brad?
It's weird. It's like all screen. I don't know what to make of it. It's trying to pull up like a clear image of it.
So the way it's the way it's set up is there's definitely a big glowing screen in the center of it, but there's what looks like an air conditioning unit behind it. That is, I assume, the main computer main computer part.
It's less fun than her old one.
Yeah, it's not that nice shade of red, you know.
Yeah, and it's not like a tabletop. This is some kind of.
It doesn't swivel like the old one did.
Yeah,
this is not a desktop. This is just the desk.
Yeah,
you don't get much of a look at it because she kind of immediately launches out to go to the club.
Yeah.
Well, she doesn't have the emails. What else are you gonna do with this thing?
Yeah, without email, there's no reason to be on there.
Yeah.
Instead, you should go hang out with your friends at Siberia, where the kids of the town and various scumbags all like to hang out.
Yeah.
And this is where they continue to hammer on the fact that, like, man, that girl really looked like you.
Wow.
She doesn't dress anything like you, though.
Because you dress kind of lame, but she dressed, you're she's not all cool. Yeah.
She was so cool. Why don't you dress like that?
Why can't you be cool?
Oh, never mind. We're interrupted by a guy with a fucking laser sight in the club.
Yes.
Just shoots two people on the dance floor.
Certainly did not see this coming.
It's our Excella guy. Apparently he makes some kind of claims that there's somebody's haranguing him. Maybe through means which normal people would not be aware. But he's being leave me alone ish. Just
so
stop it.
Here are some of the things he yells during the course of this.
Why are you making me do this? What right do you have? I just wanted to clear my head. You don't understand. You just don't understand. I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything, but that's your God. It's not my God. It's got nothing to do with me. Just leave me out of it. Just leave me out of it. Just leave me out of it. The wire can never interfere with the real world. Just leave me out of it, will you? Who the hell are you?
Lane!
Leave me out of it! Leave me out of it! Leave me out of it! Leave me out of it!
No matter where you are, everyone is always connected.
He took the pill. I cannot stop coming back to the Matrix now.
Uh-huh.
But he took the wake me up pill.
You're saying he took the red pill.
I can never remember which one's which.
No, the red pill was the good one until the conservative internet sphere took hold of it, and then it became the bad one. But that's not the Matrix's fault.
Okay, so it's the wake me up pill?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the whole freak out here reads very much like kind of standard coked out paranoid delusion, for sure.
Though Lane's reaction...
There seems to be a specific thing he's hung up on.
So we don't, at least we're up to in episode 3, we don't see who got shot, right?
The two people who got shot were just random club goers from what we've seen.
Okay, yeah, from what we know. And then
he also turns the gun on himself at the end. That is the last thing you see after Lane kind of approaches him and just kind of walks up on him as he's freaking out.
I think, does he say we're all connected?
Seems to kind of talk him into doing it.
Yeah.
Without really saying anything.
Yeah, in so many
words.
Well,
she does there's no escaping or something, we're all connected.
No matter where you go.
Yeah, yes. Which is not, I think, what he wants to hear.
No.
I don't know. She almost feels like she becomes a different person here in the way that she reacts to this.
Mm-hmm.
Like something else bubbles up to the surface.
There's a lot of like iris and pupil shots you get of Lane. dilated or constricted. I don't know if you're supposed to read that as anything other than close-up shot of people freaking out, but her friends are definitely freaking out at this moment. They're freaking
Alice
out.
In particular is very freaked out.
Yes. And then it's like, that's the end of the episode, right? And then we cut to a police station.
Well, we cut to outside the club where one of the more pregnant with meaning lines is sort of said.
There's a girl named Lane. You may have heard of her. She's on the Wired. Lane.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's like literally the first like dialogue that comes out of this episode. And then, yeah, she goes to the police station where they call home to talk to her parents, but they're not answering for some reason. And as we learn, when she gets home, it just kind of seems like they're not there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sister either, right?
No.
Yeah, like no
like
one's
nobody
there.
Is there.
Nobody's there. She's
definitely one of the more profound moments of like, not is this a dream, but is like, what is actually real in the show? Like what, on what level is reality being experienced? I'm not quite sure what to make of this.
Because it kind of bops back around. Like she walks through the house. She looks around a lot looking, you know, kind of seeing if anyone's home. Doesn't see anything, goes to her desk, falls asleep at her computer for what feels like 2 seconds in the show, but who knows how long it was, and then just sort of sidles over to the bed and then kind of goes through the house again, and it's all kind of the same deal. Just kind of empty and no one's around, though eventually she does get a good night, Lane, from her computer.
Yes. Good night, Lane. Good night, Navi.
Yeah, it's a strange moment. I'm not entirely sure what to make of it.
Well, it's especially weird because the next morning she wakes up, her mother is there, has made breakfast, and then she starts to ask her about it, and it's like, Mom, about last night, and Mom's like, what?
Gonna be late.
Well, that's the moment I was talking about earlier with her mom being kind of shitty, is like, all she does is give her shit for oversleeping.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, don't you think it's embarrassing for a junior high schooler to oversleep and be late? I was like...
Also, Mom, she's junior high.
She just watched multiple people get shot to death and had a gun pulled on her and watched the gunman shoot himself. Like,
well, but so she also seemingly has no awareness of that.
Of course not, but still, you know, it's like...
I think...
Not very supportive.
But to that point, since we're just bebopping around, Alice, I think, says the same thing later to the friends, right? Of like, shouldn't we be more freaked out having seen...
Yeah.
Somebody murder somebody and then kill themselves at this thing. And so it's weird, right? It's weird that we're not.
There's almost this like fangirling scene about the shooter, right?
Oh,
there's,
right.
Like,
yes.
Somebody asking like, was he cute? Like,
yeah, that was
show
really
on TV.
Dark. It was disturbing. Yes.
I mean, I took that very much as just a weird detached high school or middle school girls just like, you know, saying the inappropriate things to each other.
Well, and also it seems like a very direct comment on like the kind of commodification of violence as entertainment pop culture product.
Like one of the girls literally asked, was there blood splattered everywhere?
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And then we maybe skipped over it, but when Lane is taking the train, she seems to be communing with something.
Lane. 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 Good morning, Lane. You can hear me, can't you?
Who's there?
You are not alone.
Yes.
Ongoing.
Not to mention that also this is around the time the laser sights start coming out when she walks by the black car that is out front of her house.
Is there a sight? You definitely see it on the windows of the car, but does it like...
It doesn't really hit her, but you can see the beam tracking her as she walks.
Okay. I don't know if there's any... connection to be made there between that and the sight on the gun and the club, which looked quite similar, but anyway.
Well,
things seem to be escalating for sure.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Not the least of which is that she is continuing to have these ghostly visions and then also learns a little bit about this concept of the psyche chip because someone leaves one in her locker.
Yeah.
Oh, I think real quick, does this before we get there? Doesn't she also like hear from Chisa again in class?
She has a vision, another vision of Chisa or something in the I'm no longer afraid of losing my body thing comes through again.
The Bashuke can dramatically enhance the Navi in ways not yet fully understood.
There was no reason for me to stay in the real world any longer. It was only holding me back. In the real world, it no longer mattered whether I was there or not. When I realized that, I was no longer afraid of losing my body. Now I can be wherever I choose.
Who is Lane? Who is Lane?
Right, that's like she's drawing these spirals in her notebook and at least hears that if it's not her, if it's not Chisa speaking directly to her, it's a, like
hearing the image almost looks like an old woman is the thing. Like that's the first time we've seen that particular version.
And that's when you get the, when she's drawing the spirals, you got the kind of overlay of the psyche, like what it does, right? Like, oh, this boosts the computer, the Navi. Boy, this
illegal microchips.
This EMM, this memory manager is going to really get
Just go home and install a RAM doubler before you can play TIE Fighter.
That's right. You're going to love this thing. Man, you're going to get full sound now. You're going to get orchestral sound. It's going to happen.
But this is where, like, right after this, but right before she gets the chip, is where the girls are talking about, like, man, we just saw someone die in front of us yesterday. Why are we talking about this like it was a movie?
Yeah. Right, yeah. Which,
and then when she goes into the locker is where she finds the envelope with the psyche chip in it.
And her friends are disappointed because it's not a love letter. It's a damn computer stuff. I don't even know what this is.
Well, they don't even know what it is, really. Yeah. You know, and Lane, I think, only seems to have the vaguest notion of what it is. But she wants to find out. And so there's some narration here again happening as she kind of starts to suss out what her next moves are. It seems like a lot of like crosstalk in the Wired about various things, including some stuff involving this group called the Knights.
Mm-hmm.
Someone yelling the words "Dying feels so good."
Mm-hmm.
Someone talking about what sounds like fucking sleep paralysis demons watching them.
Mm-hmm. Someone's in my room, right? Yes.
Someone's being blackmailed over photos of them with a secret lover. But the whole time she's just staring at the login screen of the computer while all this dialogue is happening.
Look, we've all been on the internet. It's noisy out there.
Yeah, you find your way to you.
You stare at a screen and stuff just scrolls.
And then this is where the moment with the dad happens, where she shows him the chip and he suddenly clams up.
How's it going, Ling? So tell me, have you gotten used to your new Navi yet? What's the matter? Is there something wrong?
Do you know what this is?
I've no idea.
I thought you'd know. I thought that you'd know, Daddy.
Lane, I said I don't know.
Yeah, like, clearly something's wrong here. Like, he knows more than he's letting on, right? Like, he
never had the words "I said I don't know" ever felt more daggery than they do here.
Right.
Yeah, I totally forgot about this part with him.
Yeah, he's... I can't tell what's happening here, really, honestly. Like, is he...
Because he's so boisterous.
Yeah, right.
About the technology stuff beforehand, you know? Like, he's so excited to give her that computer. He walks into the room in a perfectly, you know, chipper mood, and as soon as she shows him that chip, he's just like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. I said I don't know.
And following this is where she makes the decision to go back to Siberia and try and figure out a little bit more about what's going on there. And there she meets the picture-perfect image of a scumbag DJ raver type who comes up to her as if he knows her and says, oh, we should throw another rave sometime.
Yeah, right.
And then she meets these three fucking Muppets who are just hanging out in this bar who look... it could either be 10 years old or 17. I don't know.
No, I'm going to go anywhere from like 10 to like 14. There's a range here, I think.
Yeah, it seems like they're in her age group at least.
They say they're in ninth grade, right?
Okay. Well, so they're like a year ahead of her. Okay.
Yes. I'm pretty sure.
And she shows them the chip and they're like, "Oh, holy fuck, how did you get this?
Oh my gosh. You got a monster voodoo too? Shit."
That's a real Pashuke, isn't it? Huh? I don't believe it.
No way! I've never seen one before.
Where in the world did you get it?
What exactly does it do?
You mean you don't know? If I installed that thing in here, I could have full access to the Wired and do anything I want with it!
But I still don't understand how to use it.
You don't know? Talk about lame, man.
Want to sell it? Can I buy it off you, huh? Can I?
Moron, you can't buy something like that!
What kind of navi do you have?
I'm not sure. I think it's a Tachibana. I think it's their newest model.
What?
Awesome!
So it's new? I mean, you haven't gotten inside of it yet?
Wow. You in eighth grade? Ninth?
Eighth.
So that means you've taken basic information at school, right? So you should know a Navi's basic motherboard layout is right there in the textbook. You connect that opposite to the main processor. It intercepts the original online information and automatically manipulates it on its own. Using it's almost as easy as building a model kit. Just avoid static electricity.
Oh, thank you.
Hold it! Information isn't free here, you know. It doesn't matter if you're in the real world or the wired.
How much should we charge, Tato? How much?
Oh, well...
You're Lane, aren't you?
Huh?
Right. I remember seeing you once. You were in the wired.
You saw me? Logged on the wired?
You were different. Nothing like the way you seem now. There's nothing unusual about taking on a different personality in the wire than the one you have in the real world. It's pretty much expected, but yours are like total opposites.
No way!
And weren't you also in the club at the same time when those stupid shootings happened? So what are you planning to do now?
What do you want me to do for you?
Go out on a date with me.
Moron.
Mew Mew, quiet. But not like you are now. I want the wild lane. I'm only kidding, girlfriend. But hey, if you ever feel like going out sometime.
What the hell are you talking about?
Mew Mew, chill out.
Forget about it. You're just jealous.
Jealous? Jealous, right.
At one point, he holds up what looks like a glue gun. It's like, I could get full access to the wired with this if I had that chip.
Yeah. They're very disappointed. She's like, I don't know.
I don't know how I got this even.
Yeah. It's like, I buy it off of you. And like, you couldn't afford that. And like, man, this thing seems pretty hard to come by and also pretty awesome.
And of course, one of them hits on her, and she just doesn't really, she kind of brushes that off, as he's also trying to goad her into, like, paying, you know, for more information or, you know, to buy the chip off her.
Ain't nothing for free.
But they, this, one of these kids kind of puts a point on it here and says, I saw you in the wired.
Hmm. Not you. Not you.
No, the wild lane.
Yeah.
Yes. You were totally different then than you are now.
That's the one he wants to date. He wants to date the wild lane.
And kind of lays it out that, you know, like, you know, people tend to affect different personalities when they are in the wired. Something that I would say is borne out true in internet culture in the ensuing years.
Yes, for sure. One detail we skipped over before, the raver dude. So what does he say to her? Something about like, oh, wow, you're really putting on the little girl look today or something like that. Like very much... Very much. I'm not gonna leap to like there are two lanes, like with the whole thing about there being another person who looks like Lane in the club necessarily, but like certainly the implication there seems like he knows the other lane if there is one, or you know what I mean?
He has a perception of her at the very least.
Yeah.
And the next scene after this is where the agents or whatever these guys are show up on the doorstep of their home, of the Iwakura home.
With their Modern Warfare pre-order bonuses.
And
their shitty rat tail, ponytail.
Yes.
And that guy with his fucking Amish beard. And
yes, the scraggly, sad internet nerd beard.
His m'lady beard.
And it's the poor sister who I feel like is just trying to live her life.
It's doesn't like, want any part of any of this bullshit. It's like, what is going on here?
Can I help you? Are you here to see someone? Who are you looking for?
Just keep walking and don't turn back. You never saw us at all, understand?
I'll call the police. Who the hell are you?
Go ahead. But what could you possibly say to them when we're not even here?
just like, I'm gonna call the cops. We weren't even here. Jesus, what is happening? And like, mom, no use. Like, well, if they come back, I'm gonna call the cop, mom. Weird dudes on our porch.
Well, and then we get to what I'm gonna say is one of the more what the fuck, like, to be continued screens coming here. Not for its surreality, but just the way that it is, the pacing of it. Because she walks in on Lane. Basically, she has looked up the schematics to put the chip in her new Navi. Yeah. She is on the floor in her nightie because she doesn't want static electricity to ruin the board.
She should have got her wristband.
Wasn't it the other kids that told her, like, don't watch out for static? I thought this was very amusing that this was her solution. It's like, yeah, I guess that would help.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on the floor just, you know, doing her screwdriver stuff, like getting the chip in there. But then it ends on the most menacing, smiling, closed eyes. Welcome home, sis.
What are you doing? Why are you dressed like that?
Oh, it's for static electricity. They say the only way to really prevent it is to take your clothes off.
Huh? You gotta be kidding.
Welcome home, big sister.
The voice is all echoey, electronic sounding, and it starts to pixelate a little bit. I don't know what the fuck to make of that.
Again, just the poor sister. Poor sister. Like, just
no idea.
That last shot might have been like one weird ass thing too many for me. Just like, you know, I don't know how much you're going to explain or bring things together in the show. I don't know that I necessarily have to have that, but like, it's a real rapid fire barrage of weird shit.
It is. And I definitely by this point in the series was a little on my back foot in terms of like, I'm just trying to keep in my head all the things that are being introduced here.
That's kind of what I mean, you know.
But the thing I will say is that I personally feel like by the time the show wraps up, it does at the very least give you a pretty good understanding of why these things are happening. If they are
okay,
even if they aren't fully explained, they are no longer inexplicable.
Well, I know what steamy fingers means.
Maybe not in great specificity.
Okay,
but you'll have an understanding more about why she's having these kinds of visions and what's going on.
Okay,
that's what I would say.
I like Lane as a character. So that I'm like kind of in, like kind of just like, I didn't understand what was happening in Twin Peaks, but I really like Cooper. And then,
you guys are all watching the subs version, right? In the original Japanese language.
Mm-hmm.
Same. So I will just say shout out to, Kaori Shimizu, who is the voice actress in Japan for Lane. This was her first big voice acting role.
Okay.
So hell of a one to start out with.
Yeah. Like, I mean, again, it's sometimes this stuff, I can't tell if it's a good performance, but it seems good.
I think it definitely paints a picture of a girl who is detached and dreamy, but not, like I don't know. It gives me a sense of a personality. It isn't just like a, you know, like there's some anime I've seen where it's just like, you are just affecting a young girl persona. There is not really anything else to this character. But I feel like Lane, right from the jump, like there is a kind of a weird mystery to her that is portrayed well by the actress.
I turned the dub on for a bit because I needed to hear it. It seemed okay.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. I did.
But there also isn't a ton of dialogue in this show. So it's like you have to work, I think, to do a bad dub of this show.
I might want to go back and listen to the dub. I kind of want to hear what the dad sounds like.
Yeah.
You know, and see if he is just like, hey, computer time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that famous line he does.
Well, I'm not going to ask for any hard answers here because these few episodes have not really given you much to go with other than some vague understandings of like what this kind of fiction was doing around this era. But you seem to like, you know, I mean, look, let's put the Matrix stuff off to the side a little bit here. What does this, what you've seen so far, give you an impression of what is happening here?
Well, okay. I mean, just counting out from these three episodes, the things that I feel like I have taken away, that people are, their life doesn't end if their life ends, right? There's some kind of spiritual or resonance beyond the physical that mm-hmm. it seems to be happening. And Lane is somehow tuned into it the Wired is somehow involved in all of it, whether that's some other plane of existence or, you know, literally a ghost in the machine, some kind of transcendence into the electrical. No idea. But as we've talked through these episodes, mm-hmm. there is more kind of weird shit going on here that I think I hadn't even put together with the way the dad's acting, the way the mom is acting, that are just don't seem to line up in normal, even dysfunctional families.
Sure.
Seems to be a little out there. So okay. I don't know. I honestly,
I think that's a totally sensible. I think what you've just said there is I think the impression I pretty much had from these first few episodes the first time I watched them.
Yeah, like I'll go back to what Brad said earlier when we started talking about this at first. I'm still coming a little bit to grips with the interpretation of some of the scenes artistically, whether like a bleached out scene is just supposed to be a stylistic choice for a sunny day, or if it's supposed to have other implications than that. Like, you know, if this is, you know, supposed to mean like we're in some other place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, there's a lot of it, so
yeah.
I'm not quite sure yet, but maybe that'll become clear. Because you know, Lane has visions, and
yeah.
I don't know when it's sometimes it seems fairly clear when Lane's having a vision and when not, but she's also walking to school and it's just on a white plane almost with some harsh mm-hmm. shadows. So I don't know, it's cool so far.
Yeah.
Again, I had no idea what's going on here. I like my favorite parts are their computer stuff so far. And they're weird computer
drugs. Not a surprise to me at all.
And they're computer drugs. Like,
yeah.
I think that's kind of neat. I like the idea of this, like, not drug, but thing that can affect you and not just nanomachines.
Right. Brad, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, the Matrix notwithstanding, I can't exclude the possibility of some reality within a reality that is potentially digital in nature. Just seems too obvious, but I don't know. Also, this maybe is a little bit literal, but maybe some kind of alter ego on the part of Lane going on, perhaps that she's not aware of herself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I certainly think the seeds of that notion are planted in these early episodes, the way everyone keeps talking about her and the way that, you know, people seem to have a perception of her that is outside her own is, you know, certainly would lead to that kind of thinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, that might be too straightforward for what's actually going on, but it's the most obvious conclusion to draw.
Well, again, I don't want any hard conclusions yet. We're not far enough into this thing yet to really know what's going on. But, you know, I'm glad to hear you're enjoying it so far. This will all be done by the time this month is done. There are only 13 episodes of this. We have done our first three here. Our next three layers, I'm just going to keep calling them that because I kind of like that. Are episodes 4, 5, and 6, religion, distortion, and kids. Kids!
Religion, distortion,
kids!
Yes. What was that? What was it? What talk was that? Wasn't plain talk, was it? What was it?
Oh, I think it was plain. Is it plain speak and
plain,
whisper?
Plain speak?
Plain talk.
Plain talk?
Is it plain talk?
It's plain talk.
Time to go see if somebody has like written a modern version of that.
Whisper is the specific voice that they use.
I mean, that text-to-speech stuff was baked in pretty early into the OS. OS, I want to say it was like 7 had it. Is there no, hey Brad,
System 7, yeah.
Totally a total digression here, but
by all means.
I don't remember like an system 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Like, what is the story there?
I didn't have access to Macintoshes then at all either. I think those existed. I mean, like in
were
a way that
GUIs?
Users were aware of. No, the Mac was a GUI from day one.
Okay.
I assume they used that terminology, like system 5.
Okay.
In a consumer facing way, but I can't fully remember.
All right.
I think it was like they used the system terminology up until 8 or 9, and then they moved to Mac OS.
Okay, because I only remember 7.
System software, it looks like, is how they referred to it before, like 7. I think around system 7 is the time I first saw a Mac in school.
Same here.
But it seems like in the 80s, it was like system software 4.2, system software 5.0.
Okay.
It looks like.
All right. Interesting.
I'm going to keep all that in the show, by the way. That's all.
Okay. Dude, I'll fucking, I'll continue to sit here and talk about this stuff. Yeah.
No, that's the thing is that, like, I honestly, I think this is a good avenue for us to talk about weird computer shit of the 90s as much as it is the show.
I mean, I'm a huge nerd, but that stuff is endlessly fascinating to me. I mean, like, the failure of Copland is why they had to go buy an operating system, because they tried, they wasted 2 or 3 years on that thing and it wouldn't even run, basically. It was a complete fucking disaster and they were almost out of cash. And so they realized they had to buy an operating system, and it came down to two candidates, which was Next Step from Next, that was founded by Steve Jobs. And remember the B-Box? Remember BOS?
BOS. Yeah.
Anybody?
Yeah. I remember the hearing academically BOS.
That was, yeah, I mean, they sold like four-digit numbers of B-Boxes, I think. But that was the other alternative. They were looking at either buying Next or B, because B was also started by Jean-Louis Gasset, a former Apple executive. And so there's a world, there is a reality where they bought B instead of Next, and Apple probably ceased to exist within 5 or 10 years.
See, it's funny, you know, you see the thing that is the actual reference they are doing when you see Copland, but I think of Copland, the 1997 James Mangold movie, because that's just the way I live my life.
I also have not seen that movie in 20 years, but I remember it being quite good.
Oh, that movie fucking rules. Maybe one day when the strike is over, we'll have a little James Mangold marathon or something and do that one. But I fucking love that movie.
I've never seen it.
Oh, there you go.
Wait, have I seen it? Is that the Sylvester Stallone,
Ray Liotta, okay. Harvey Keitel?
Yeah, no.
Stallone in like a small town cop uniform.
Yeah, right? I don't think I've seen that one. I get it confused with the Jack Nicholson looking for the missing kid one.
Oh wow.
What was that one called?
Oh, what the hell is that one called? That is the Sean Penn directed movie.
Yes. I don't know why in my head I switched them up or confused them, but
they aren't particularly. I mean, they're
I've
not
never
the
seen
same
Copland,
kind of movie.
So I don't know. Yeah.
The Pledge.
The Pledge.
God, I saw The Pledge in theaters. What a fucking piece of work that is.
The Pledge. Anyway.
Great performance, but I don't know about the movie. We'll see. But we're not there yet. It's going to be a while before we go back to the cinema of Hollywood, as we said. Very least this month, we are doing the rest of Lane. Maybe we'll do some more anime after that. Maybe we'll move to some European cinema at some point. But for right now, we are in the middle of Lane, and we'll do the next three episodes next week here on the Next Lander Watchcast. As always, thank you, Brad. Thank you, Vinny.
Thank you.
Thank you. I was desperately hoping to be able to tell you before we sign off here that I have found a... like an open source version of Plain Talk, but I have not yet.
Okay. You will report back next week on your quest to find a new version of that. But until then, thank you to everyone who has been listening and watching at home along with us. We'll see you next time.